I'm Afshin Rattansi and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE as millions face starvation in Palestine. Today, protests are being held all around the world against the UK-US EU nation-armed genocide in Palestine after tens of thousands, mostly women and children, have been killed by NATO nation weapons. It comes after the fatal demonstration of one US Air Force soldier this week, Aaron Bushnell. He set himself on fire outside Washington's Israeli embassy, shouting "Free Palestine" with his dying breaths as Israeli security aimed a gun at him. All this as Joe Biden pledges more billions of dollars from the USA to Israel to carry out the genocide. One journalist who tries to hold the US to account is Saeed Arakat, Washington bureau chief for Al-Quds newspaper. He joins me now from Washington, D.C. Thank you so much, Saeed, for coming on the show. Millions demonstrating, as I said, all around the world today against this war in Palestine. Tell us what it's like to be in that State Department briefing room. People can watch that on the internet, your questioning of Biden's representatives. I mean, you're asking questions of representatives of alleged co-conspirators in genocide. What's it like?
Well, thank you for having me, Afshin. I'm honored to be with you on this program. First of all, I mean, I go there every day basically because I need to do my job. That is my job. The State Department has always been my beat. I used to go to the White House at one point, and I stopped doing that because I get a great deal more from the State Department than I would otherwise from the White House. So first of all, I go there because I need to do my job. I'm focused on U.S. foreign policy, security policy, and of course, everything else U.S. related, because to be quite honest, I'm a one-man show here for my newspaper. So that's number one. I go there with this mindset. You know, I need to know what are the dynamics for the day or for the week in general, so I can probe and see where the U.S. stands on these issues. I don't go there for showmanship, and I definitely don't go there to score points. I quite simply go there to ask my question and be able to write about it.
But of course, you're there with other journalists, and you witness, when you talk about showmanship, John Kirby was there, I think, say a month ago, giving some briefings. He's now moved on to the White House giving them. And you see Matthew Miller, and you've seen, I don't know whether it's showmanship, I wonder whether it's genuine, the pain in their faces as they talked about the events of October the 7th. How do you compare that to the pain they show in their faces when we're talking about, well, now millions obviously facing famine in Gaza, but before then, the tens of thousands, mostly women and children, being killed by American weaponry?
Yes, a difference of day and night, no doubt about that. You know, I was a spokesperson for the United Nations in Iraq, so I know that this is not an easy job for any person to sit and you know, basically be a mouthpiece for someone, more so for the government of the United States of America, that has a very aggressive policy all throughout the world. It has 700 bases all throughout the world. It has a number of wars that are ongoing. So they have a plate full of priorities, all to, you know, to do the betting on behalf of their government doings everywhere. For me, for the Palestinian issue, which I focus on, definitely the United States of America is complicit in this war. I mean, it's it never shies away from saying that we are 100% behind Israel. They supply them with weapons, with money, with ammunition. You know, they ensure that Israel has enough ammunition to continue committing its genocide against the Palestinians, and they provide them with political cover, as we saw when the United States basically vetoed a call for a ceasefire. So on the one hand, as you mentioned, there is a very strong and emphatic and very sympathetic and so on behalf of Israel, and there is always almost dismissive posturing toward the Palestinians. We saw this when the president himself and his spokespeople all throughout, whether in the White House or in the State Department, basically dismissed the number of the Palestinians killed. You know, they said this is exaggerated. So that is a total dismissive attitude towards the life of Palestinians. So, you know, you have to approach it with an open mind, because you want to see what lurks in the back of their mind, what's going to happen next, how long will the United States keep its support, its you know, unequivocal support of this Israeli genocidal policy. So that is the motive behind my questions, and that's how I read what they say back to me.
Do you think other journalists in the room believe it when, far from your view of these actions, the representatives of the Biden administration say, no, no, it's we that want peace. It's we that want the Palestinian two-state solution. We want, we're there using leverage for negotiations to save the babies of Gaza. Do you think, I mean, clearly you're not persuaded by that, but are there people in that room that really think that that's the case?
Well, my colleagues in the State Department are well informed. They travel around the world. They accompany the Secretary of State on all his trips. Many of them do each and every one trip that he. So they know. I mean, you know, they are aware. They know what's going on. They ask the proper questions. Sometimes they work for different organizations with different priorities and different policies. So they are aware for sure. You know, when there is something that is so outrageous being said by, let's say, the spokesperson, whether on not buying or not knowing whether an event, a particular event is true or not when it comes to the Palestinians, like pulling the incubator tubes from babies and so on, as we have seen in many hospitals in Gaza, casting doubt on that. And then you see that my colleagues actually do stand up to the spokesperson, and they point out to different sources that speak of that. But you're right. I mean, the United States of America supports this war. It has supported it from the very beginning, and it has supported Israel all throughout, and has always made, you know, excuses for it, to doing what it's doing. I mean, let's go back to the killing of the Palestinian-American journalist Shireen Abu Akleh, and what they have done to basically cover for Israel. So this is a consistent policy, but they don't get away with it a great deal of the time. We, you know, they hold their feet to the fire, myself included, and we try to show the, you know, the discrepancy, the gap between what they say and what they actually do.
You see, there was some hope 1, 2, 3, 4 months ago that we were hearing about people not happy with the State Department, Blinken's State Department, and there were resignations within the department, presumably reflecting what you're saying there. What is the state of the State Department right now? Are all the people who opposed Biden's policy gone now?
Well, I tell you what, I think the State Department in general, career diplomats, career people that work for the State Department, especially those who focus on the war and peace issues, the Middle East and so on, they're fully aware, and they know there's a great deal of bitterness among employees, high-level employees in the State Department. They want an immediate ceasefire. Many of them do. We've seen hundreds of them express in letters submitted to the Secretary of State himself. We saw that the Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, responded to those employees. We see this in the White House. We see this in the Democratic National Committee, for instance. We see this in the USAID. We see it everywhere. We see it in 22 different federal agencies basically walked out of the job to protest the ongoing war and to call for a ceasefire. So that feeling, Afsan, is still there. It is still, and it's getting stronger. And the administration is feeling the heat. I mean, we saw on the Tuesday, the 26th, for instance, during the primary, on the 27th of February, we saw that in the primary in Michigan, the non-committed vote garnered something like 25,000 votes, a lot more than was expected, about 15% of the vote. So the Biden administration knows that if it continues down this path, it is actually in trouble in terms of reelecting the president. So they know all of this, and the feeling is still there. And I, in fact, it is getting stronger.
Yeah, I'm not sure about USAID and the tweet from Samantha Power, but as you say, the Michigan
primaries. Samantha Power, notwithstanding, you know.
But the Michigan primaries. Hasn't it been lost already? I mean, you're saying they're slowly beginning to understand, but do they not realize that actually the nail in the coffin of Biden's reelection chances is in Gaza and Jerusalem?
Absolutely. I think Gaza is going to be a major issue in this election. I know Americans vote their pocketbook. They vote their economic situation. This time around, the American public, especially young Democrats, those under 30, with every poll after poll, it shows that Gaza matters a great deal. Foreign policy matters a great deal. They see, and in fact, older ones, they see that U.S. Policy, whether in Afghanistan, the way they pulled out in a humiliated kind of withdrawal, the folly in the Ukraine war, definitely in Gaza. Gaza sort of engenders a great deal of emotion. We see it everywhere. I mean, every event that Biden goes to, every election event that he goes to, he encounters protesters that call him Genocide Joe, that call for immediate ceasefire. So this is an issue that will continue to be there for months to come, even if there is a ceasefire, as the president suggested on Monday the 26th, when he said that we might have a ceasefire in place by the following Monday. So, with all that, one perceives, as we've seen, a poll that was actually published on Wednesday, the 28th, that showed 70% of Americans, all Americans, Republicans included, want an immediate ceasefire. So yes, it matters. The Gaza war is going to play going to be big in the 2024 election.
Well, as you say, the President Biden with an ice cream on a late night talk show. No one really understood what he meant. The Israeli government certainly didn't. Just before we go to the break, tell me about the atmosphere in the State Department briefing room as you knew about Aaron Bushnell, who set himself alight outside the Israeli embassy down the street, Washington, D.C., with his dying words being "Free Palestine." I know it was censored on CNN, the BBC, other NATO nation media, saying he just burned himself outside the embassy, but without mentioning why.
Well, in fact, they did, Afshin. I mean, both the New York Times, the Washington Post, and in fact, CNN, other news agencies.
Belatedly,
especially after 48 hours had elapsed on Tuesday, the 27th, a lot of this stuff was said. They pointed to the cause of why he immolated himself and so on. And the State Department, there was a great deal of sadness. I mean, people are horrified by such action. That is really an extreme mode of protest. As Bushnell himself said right before he, torched himself, so to speak. So, yes, and in fact, it was asked about in the State Department on Tuesday, I believe, after a couple of days had elapsed. And the spokesman said, he saddened, he feels for his family and so on and all these things. But without a doubt, this is a sad thing. I remember I was around when the Tunisian Mohamed Bouazizi did the same thing and sparked a revolution basically in Tunisia. I remember, I'm old enough to remember what was happening during the Vietnam War and so on, with the Buddhist monks and so on. This is really an extreme mode, an extreme expression of protest, and it leaves an embittered feeling, a sadness in everybody's mouth.
Saeed Arakat, I'll stop you there. More from the Washington Bureau Chief for Al-Quds newspaper after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with Saeed Arakat, the Washington bureau chief for Al-Quds newspaper. Saeed, we were talking about what it was like, what it is like to be in that State Department press briefing room in the Biden administration, the dying days of it. Is there a knowledge in that room about Matthew Miller, who you ask questions from every day? He used to work with Bob Menendez, who sponsored a U.S. act that said anyone trying to boycott Israel could be sentenced up to 20 years. We know Bob Menendez ended up, in a career done for corruption, of course. And that was Miller's boss. Matthew Miller used to work for him, and now he's the one answering questions about alleged genocide. Anyone trying to stay clear about, in effect, Matthew Miller, the Biden Blinken press department spokesperson's involvement in previously covering up corruption and his bias clearly on the Palestine issue?
Well, the spokesperson in general is treated as such, as a spokesperson. He comes in, we see him as the person who's going conveying to us where the government stands. We pose to him the questions that we think that matter. He either knows these issues and tells us exactly what the American position is, or he comes back to us with these positions if he's unaware of it. We don't sit in judgment of what people do. We see what they are doing now, what they're doing at the moment, what they can say at the moment, whether he gives us the access that we need to have, whether he's cooperative, and because also the spokesperson definitely speaks on behalf of the government, but also he's like the link between the journalist and in this case, the Secretary of State. So that's really what we are focused on. We don't look into his background. That is a personal thing. In all my days, my years and decades of going to the State Department, rarely ever I saw a personal issue comes up in this briefing. My colleagues, myself, I try my best to maintain a professional level. And we keep in mind, in my case, let me say that I don't take anything for granted. I know that calling on any journalist is a courtesy. It is not a right that we have. I mean, the spokesperson...
many other countries don't have this situation. It's a privilege.
Many other countries, yes. So it is, we sit there. And, I must also admit that I have been called upon every time. There was not a single day in which I was not called upon to pose my question. So that's what I... focus on. I don't know how I would feel if I am not called upon. I'd probably be a little bit upset for a day.
Yeah, but isn't it getting a bit more blatant? I mean, this week we had Matthew Miller say they don't order other countries about, and it took Associated Press, which has not really covered itself in glory, arguably, in recent conflicts. Their correspondent there saying, well, what, unless you invade them? And then there's laughter. But, of course, there are tens of millions that have been killed, wounded or displaced in these recent U.S. invasions over the past decades or so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we all appreciate our colleague Matthew Lee, who's a very good journalist and asks a lot of good questions and so on and knows the issues. We know that the government is going to, the government of the United States has always defended itself against its aggression. I remember during the Iraq War and the spokespeople, whether it's Boucher or many others, would come, or McCormick, they would come and defend this horrific crime, and it was an awful crime, or during the Libya bombing and all these things. So the U.S. is an aggressive nation. It has a huge interest. It's a hegemon. It practices hegemony all over the world, and in the Middle East for sure. It has fleets and carrier task forces roaming all around. It is always threatening and blackmailing other countries and so on. So that is the spokesman is going to speak on their behalf.
Say on Ukraine, this phrase that Miller uses and is echoed presumably in all the talking points, unprovoked invasion of Ukraine. I mean, does no journalist in that room believe this phrase unprovoked, which echoes out of European capitals as much as it does congressional politicians? I mean, it's clearly a word designed to misinform.
Yes, but I tell you what, Afshan, I mean, the issue on Ukraine has been raised many, many times since 2014, since before then. I mean, I'm old enough and I've been going there day after day, and I posed a lot of questions on Ukraine in the past when I had the opportunity. We know, I mean, we know that Russia, for instance, tried to avoid going to war. Many times we asked about the point that Russia was right before the war began in 2022. Things that were basically dismissed and thrown in the trash can by the American administration and so on. We know there were many efforts. We are aware of the CIA operations in Ukraine way before this war began in 2022. So no, I mean, they don't get away with it in terms of what they say. I mean, there's always people that are willing to challenge them, journalists that are willing to challenge them on these points. Now, I understand American corporate media is basically subscribes to the adage that differences stop at the water edge, the old American adage and so on. But some things are so stark that they do get probed and they do get pointed out to the spokesman, whoever he is.
Except that, say, they don't really talk about the beheaded babies, mass rape, and all the propaganda that came out initially after the October the 7th resistance attack. Is that because they know that all of you will go, hang on, the evidence isn't there, even though they did so in November? I mean,
Yes,
they were
I
just lying to
concur. I
you.
mean, right, they're plain lying. And in fact, when I said, listen, this has been a debunked story time and time again, they say, no, it's not a debunked story. When we say about the hospital, the attack of the hospitals in Gaza, whether it's Shifa or Al-Ahli or any of the other hospitals, and they say, well, Hamas uses human shields and so on. And they don't really, I mean, these are just buzzwords that the Israelis have point in the past. They don't know what the human shield is. It was an invention of the Israelis. They're the ones that used to strap Palestinian kids in front of the jeep to prevent the other kids from throwing stones. So this is an old Israeli tactic. So, but it's a cover to basically say it's okay to kill civilians, to bomb hospitals, to go in, and all these things. And we have seen in one in the case of the hospitals, for instance, in one hospital after the other that it's all lies. I mean, the decapitation, it's a lie. The mass rape is a lie. I mean, and they stick to it for a while, and then, they hope that by not talking about it, it will just go away.
And by that time, the lies are already out there. But then give me a
Absolutely.
sense of whether you think it is the Israeli government running the State Department or the State Department running the Israeli government. Because clearly, they look uncomfortable sometimes when you ask them about obvious and clear violations of any principle after 1945. Is it the Israeli government running Antony Blinken?
No, I don't think so. I think it's the other way around. The United States, in this partnership between the United States and Israel, America is the bigger partner. America will dictate whatever it wants.
So what did
We
they
know
get out
that
of it?
if joke because it's interest. It is the hegemon. It is, Israel is America's baby. They will protect it till the very end. There is a great deal of pro-Israel influence in America. There's a very powerful Israeli lobby. Many, in fact, there are 20, 25
Yeah, but that's again
organizations.
Israel
The Israeli
controlling
lobby.
them.
Yeah,
APAC
right.
is
No, no,
Israel.
I, no, no, no. But that is absent. That is only allowed because the United States of America wants it allowed. And if Biden wanted a ceasefire, he can do it immediately. I mean, we all remember when in 1982 when Reagan, picked up the phone and called the Israeli government, called Menachem Begin, and he said, Menachem, you're going to stop this now. And he stopped it now in 20 minutes and so on. We know that Biden himself, back in 2021, for instance, he called Netanyahu, on I think it was May 10 or May 12, 2021, in the last war. And he said that you've run out of runway. Enough is enough. And he stopped him. So we know in this partnership, Israel really lives on an American umbilical cord. whether it's by weapon, by money, by political support, by every which way.
Okay, just so finally.
To say that the United, yeah. Now the United States may not be willing to use its leverage, but it has a great deal of leverage.
Well, just finally then, I'm speaking to you from the UAE. Does it not care about what the Saudis, what the UAE think, as the UAE being a co-sponsor of the ceasefire, the initial UN Security Council resolution demanding a ceasefire before the US and I think then the UK vote veto? Do they not care what Saudi Arabia and the UAE think?
The United States does not have allies. The United States consider whatever, you know, those countries that it calls its allies basically are clandestine. They provide them with protection and so on. So they feel that they can impose their will, and they have. We have seen them in the past. And when they are convinced that this policy is a failed policy, because, first of all, this whole war has not given Israel the ability to achieve its goals, which is, you know, the decapitation of Hamas, hunting its leadership, freeing the hostages by force, and changing the regime. It all failed. So when the U.S. is convinced that this is actually is a failed policy and a costly policy, the U.S. is isolated as a result of this, Israel isolated, but also the United States of America is totally isolated, I think only then it will act.
Saeed Erekat, thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those bereaved by UK-US-EU armed bombing in Palestine, Lebanon, Yemen, Syria and Iraq. We'll be back on Monday with former Trump Communications Director Anthony Scaramucci. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.